Transmitter device activated. Coordinates set for Earth 2.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Earth 2 Podcast, your weekly exploration of the DC Comics multiverse and the legacy of their Golden Age characters through the Silver and the Bronze Ages of comics. I'm Peter Watson, believe it or not.
And I'm David Steele. He's back, thank God! Listeners, we haven't recorded together since December the 13th. 2023, and of course today is, what, the 21st of February?
Yes.
2024. So there we go. Peter's voice has recovered sufficiently that we can do some recording. Peter, it's so good to see you. How are you?
I am not 100%, but I'm certainly functional.
That'll do.
So I can record. So here we go. Sorry, folks, for the delay. I must say a big thank you to Logan and to Steve for filling in.
Yes.
They both did amazing jobs. They were a joy to edit because I'm still putting the episodes together to send them out to you on a weekly basis. We wanted to make sure that you, the lovely listener, weren't going to be left short in the meantime while I was in my sick bed. So a big thank you to Logan and Steve. They were both absolutely amazing and wonderful. And
yes,
we'll have you both back on the show very soon.
Yes. Huge thanks to Logan and Steve. Logan, at very last minute, coming around to help us with the Robin Hood and Genghis Khan stories. Mm-hmm. And Steve, in a timey-wimey, we still haven't, at this point recording, we still haven't released the first episode that Steve recorded.
That's true, yes.
Which we recorded quite a way in advance, thinking, yeah, Peter will be better, but then if we just do this one, it's not a huge story. Mm-hmm. Ended up being quite a long episode, actually. Anyway, Peter will be fine to do all these ones before it, but I think Steve ended up recording four altogether. So, yes, it's nice to finally properly be back doing what we do, because the last episode that Peter appeared properly on was of course our Hogmanay episode.
Were you?
Yeah, which Logan was on as well, obviously. And things and stuff. So without any further ado, what are we doing this week? Well, as you know, if you listened to our episode a couple of weeks ago, you know that the Spectre has returned.
Yay.
In the pages of Adventure Comics. Peter, do you have any thoughts on that first Spectre story?
It was gruesome. It is by far the most gruesome story that's been done on the podcast so far. I have a feeling it's not going to be the most gruesome story we're going to do in the podcast, considering we've got all the rest of the Spectre's Adventure Comics run to come up.
Yes.
But it was fantastic. Really different and very enjoyable. It was great fun revisiting that story because, as I said, I have been editing the episodes together, so I was putting it together with your recording with Steve as I was reading the comic in front of me.
Uh-huh.
And it was wonderful. It was great. And it's different.
So, in a way, you're kind of getting the experience that the listeners do.
In a way.
I suppose, weren't you?
In a way, except I hear a lot more fluffs, so...
Yes, this is true. There was one episode, I can't remember which one it was now. There's one episode that Steve and I did, and basically there was a screw-up at the end, and we didn't get the recording sort of properly saved, which meant we had to do it again. I think the second time we did it was a lot better. I can't remember which one it was. It might have been Weird War Tales, I'm not sure.
It was the Weird War one, yeah.
Yeah. That was quite a lot of swearing late at night, you can imagine, listeners, but not to worry. Right, so yes, the Spectre has returned. This week we're covering two stories. We're covering the Spectre stories from issues 432 and 433 of Adventure Comics. The first one, issue 432, was published on the 28th of December 1973, 3 days after my first Christmas, which is nice.
Aww.
Peter's going to tell you about the cover. It's one of my favourites in this series, actually.
It's lovely. We've got the Adventure Comics logo at the top, but that's not the important thing. The important thing is we're in some sort of desolate woodland, perhaps. There is a stream going down. There's a bare tree in the background. Very atmospheric. There is a man who looks like the Milk Tray Man, perhaps. He's wearing a black bodysuit and he has a belt with a holster on it. And he seems to have some sort of night vision goggles, perhaps, on.
Mm-hmm.
There's a smoking gun in his hand and he's holding what appears to be a corpse who's face down in this stream. But rising from the stream is the form of the Spectre. And it's awesome. Wonderful Jim Aparo.
It's a great image. It's a bit of a Defenders cover.
Yes.
I've actually been requested by Caitlin Higgins, friend of the show, that I explain to her why Defenders issue 39 is one of my favourite comic covers of all time, and what the massive discrepancies are. So I'm going to do a short video on that for Caitlin's benefit. She may have seen it by now. Yeah, I like this cover. We should point out it's still just Adventure Comics at this point.
Yes.
The title hasn't been added to. The Spectre returns along the top. The line of DC Superstars, as I always read it, or DC, the line of Superstars, as I think as other folks sometimes do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an interesting one. The bodysuit guy is pretty cool. I'm pretty sure that Chuck, who I've known in the socials for years, not our friend Chuck Lordens, I think, and I always get his name, I'm never sure how to pronounce it, Chuck Brulé, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
He quite often does collage images based on famous comic covers, and he did one based on this a couple of years ago, I think, for a Dick Grayson annual.
All
maybe
right.
longer than a couple of years ago now that I think about it. So I'll need to see if I can find that and retweet it. It's a good one. Apparel, absolutely top of his game, I think, at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So without any further ado, let's get on with this before Peter's voice evaporates again. We begin with a wonderful opening splash page, a caption that reads,
"In the world of mortal men, he is Jim Corrigan, hard-boiled police detective, but to the vermin of the underworld, he is the Spectre, awesome avenger of evil, an earthbound ghost who punishes evil with a fearsome vengeance from beyond the grave. Join us now for... The anguish of the Spectre.
Yes, take a drink immediately, listeners, because we have a full moon in a splash
Yay.
Page. What's going on in splash page is that we seem to be in the same location for the cover, sort of desolate, barren, swampy, woodland, marshland type thing with skeletal trees in the background. And there are three figures dressed in the all-covering black bodysuits with belts and the goggles that Peter described. And one of them seems to have what looks like a musical instrument case over their shoulder, I'm jesting slightly, and rearing up above them, out of the mist and the fog, is the image of the Spectre. They're all sort of reacting, looking up at the Spectre, but the lead one is shouting, "No! Please! Stay back! Stay back!" And one of the other ones screams, and it's all very exciting. At the bottom, we are given the credits for the issue.
Script, Michael Fleischer. Art continuity, Russell Carley. Art, Jim Aparo, and editor, Joe Orlando.
Art continuity is one of those vague credits that you see sometimes. I've seen it, you know, I think I've said this already, I've seen it and it's been used to describe someone who's maybe done some of the inking or the layouts or even just background inks. Mm-hmm. I'm not really sure what it means in this context. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so listeners, the first couple of pages of the story feature these three people all in their slinky, all in one black costumes. And it's a little hard to work out who's who and who's saying what at any time because they all look very, very similar. So we're just going to summarise the first couple of pages, the gist of it. The story beginning properly in page two, as these three figures are breaking into a large walled estate. We can see a sign that reads Adrian Sterling Estate next to a gate that they're standing next to. But they use a grappling hook. They climb over the wall into the grounds. A couple of guard dogs arrive with a full moon looming in the background. One of the three people shoots the dogs, so that upset me immediately. And it seems that the target that people are aiming for is the swimming pool. There's an electrical fence. They vault over it using poles. And one of them keeps lookout as another dives into the pool and plants a magnetised bomb, which has a large ticking clock on it. Looks like it's wrapped up dynamite or something. They attach this magnetised bomb to a grill over the drain in the bottom of the pool. The bomb is set for 8:30 the following morning. They take their leave, and at the top of page four, the caption for panel one reads...
Moments later...
Yes, after having taken their leave, they're all taking their masks off. There's one man, thick dark hair, and a thick dark moustache. Another chap, with kind of brown hair, good sideburns. As their leader takes off the mask, their leader is saying, "Tomorrow morning, you boys open up your salon like nothing happened. Business as usual." And the chap nearest us says,
"Don't worry, we know what to do."
And their leader is revealed in panel two of page four as a blonde lady, short cropped blonde hair, piercing blue eyes. That wasn't what we were expecting at all, given all the violence and the grapple hooks and the electrical fence and the bomb and all that. This blonde woman is saying in panel two, "I have an early morning modelling appointment, so we'll all be in the clear. Now, let's get out of here. I need my beauty rest." And one of the lads says,
"Okay, Vera, let's go."
So she's established as Vera. Now, panel three.
And so, the next morning...
The next three panels all have a clock in the top left-hand corner. First of these three panels, we can see that it's 8:15, and already the chap with brown hair is at work in his hairdressing salon dealing with a woman's hair. 8:15 in the morning.
Must be busy.
Blimey. They must be in demand. Maybe there's a big party on that night. This chap with the brown hair, as he teases and combs and sprays, says,
"It's you, ma'am. Smashingly you."
"Why, thank you, Eric," says the woman, looking into a mirror. The next panel has a time clock showing that it's 8:20, and we see Vera wearing a pink dress with weird-looking black shapes, almost look like spiders or the fronds of a fern or something, and there's a chap taking her photograph. As Vera twists and pouts, the man taking the photographs says,
"That's it, Vera, that's it. Now pout a little for me, will you?"
And the next panel, the last in this little sequence, shows that the time is now 25 past 8, and we see a gentleman, an older man with grey hair, looking really good shape for his age, blue swimming trunks, climbing a ladder, presumably to his diving board, as he thinks to himself, almost 8:30, time for my morning swim. In the next panel, we see him doing the backstroke up and down the pool, and he's thinking, sometimes this pool is so relaxing that I... But then we cut to the insert panel, showing the magnetised underwater bob, and we see the tick, 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 as the hand of the clock reaches 8:30, and in the final panel of page 4, there is a massive...
Baroom!
Huge explosion, which causes absolute turmoil, and throws Adrian Sterling up out of the water.
Gasp.
Good grief, it's horrendous. Hopefully there'll be room for those in the socials. In the first panel of page 5, where there's an insert shot of a very attractive young lady with long brown hair. Looks a bit like Chloe from Jersey Shore, actually, in this panel. Maybe we should have got her to do the voice. This girl is reacting in horror, and she cries,
Father! Oh my God! Oh my dear God!
And a slow dissolve. A caption reads,
Later!
And we see the familiar figure of Lieutenant Jim Corrigan is on the scene. We can see in the background various police officers and medical guys taking photographs. You can see Sterling's body covered in a sheet down on the ground. The young lady, now with a sort of house coat on over a bikini, is crying, and Corrigan is in the process of saying to her, I know this is rough on you, Miss Sterling, but if we're going to catch the men who did this, I'm going to have to ask you a few questions.
I understand, Lieutenant Corrigan. Let's go into the house.
Presently.
Miss Sterling sat down on the couch, Corrigan standing over her. Miss Sterling is saying,
And lately he'd been very upset about his business. I think it had something to do with his partner, Maxwell Flood, but he wouldn't tell me what it was.
I see.
You don't think Daddy's partner killed him, do you, Lieutenant? Why, he and my father...
I don't know what I think, Miss Sterling. When you're a cop, you learn to suspect everybody. It's an attitude that goes with a flat feed and the $40 suits. But you've been a great help, Miss Sterling, as he starts to take his leave, it seems. If I come up with anything else, I'll...
Couldn't you call me Gwen, Lieutenant?
Sure, Gwen. Thank you. You've been very cooperative. Now it's time I...
Lieutenant Corrigan, Jim... Do you have a wife or a girlfriend?
I'm not really free to get involved with a woman, Gwen, as much as I might like to be. Now, you take it easy. I'll be in touch if anything breaks.
All right, Jim. Goodbye.
Corrigan takes his leave. A slow dissolve caption for the next panel.
Much later that day.
We see Corrigan going through a glass door into an office. We can see on the door of the office it says, Maxwell Flood, Vice President. Corrigan's thinking to himself, Gwen said this guy Flood likes to work late. That's good. The Spectre works best without an audience. It'll be very interesting to see how Maxwell Flood reacts when the ghost of Adrian Sterling accuses him of murder. And with that, Corrigan shifts briefly into the form of the Spectre and then reforms in a transparent style as what seems to be the image of Adrian Sterling. This image walks forward and phases through the door of Maxwell Flood, Vice President. In the first panel of page 7, we see Maxwell, an older... thicker set man, balding, another moustache on him. Moustache is very popular in the 70s, listeners. Maxwell looks up and sees, to his eyes, the hovering, transparent figure of his former colleague. Maxwell cries, Huh? Who are you? What are you doing here? The form, seemingly of Adrian Sterling, replies, Why, Maxwell, don't you remember me? I'm your partner, Adrian Sterling, or rather, I was... Before you killed me, and he points. Maxwell recalls in horror. No, Adrian, I didn't do it. It wasn't me, I swear it wasn't. For the love of God, please, don't! Maxwell looks pretty shaken up. The spook has disappeared, and Maxwell's thinking, he's gone. Adrian Sterling's ghost is gone. But he'll be back to get me. I've got to call Eric right away. The next panel, we see him on the phone. Sweat pouring down his brow as he says, I tell you, Eric, it's true. I saw Adrian Sterling's ghost. He was right here in my office. He came right through the locked door. And he knows, Eric. He knows everything. He accused me of his murder. Down the phone, we hear Eric saying,
Calm down, will you, Flood? Get a grip on yourself.
Our perspective shifts for the final panel of page 7. We're with Eric at the hairdressing salon. We can see his colleague with the moustache is there behind him. We hear Maxwell's voice down the phone saying, Eric, I'm scared. When I hired the three of you to kill Sterling so he wouldn't expose my theft from the company, I didn't know he'd come back from the grave to...
Look, Flood, you'd better come on over to the salon right now. Just make sure you aren't followed. Goodbye.
He hangs up, Eric puts the receiver back on the cradle in the first panel of page 8, turns to his mustachioed colleague and says,
"That was Flood. He's completely lost his marbles. Says he's being haunted by Adrian Sterling's ghost. He's coming over now. We'll have to get rid of him before he goes completely crackers and blabs his story to the law."
To which his colleague says,
"Right.
A slow dissolve.
Presently."
Yes, we see Maxwell heading down the road in his car. Well, floating above him is the Spectre. Spectre is thinking, "Run, evil parasite. You cannot escape the Spectre."
Soon,
Maxwell arrives at the salon. I don't think we hear the name of the salon, actually, which is disappointing. Eric greets him, saying,
"Flood, my man, good to see you. Come in, come in. Peter, you stay up front. Mr. Flood and I are going to chat a bit in one of the back booths."
And so,
moments later,
yes, Maxwell, still sweating profusely, makes him into one of the back booths. Eric drawing the curtains so they can't be spotted. Eric says,
"Now, Flood, sit down. Try to relax. What's all this drivel about Adrian Sterling's ghost?"
"He knows, I tell you. He accused me of his murder."
Now, Flood, calm down. Tell me everything the ghost said, word for word, will you?"
And as he says this, you see Eric has picked up what looks like a hairdryer?
Mm-hmm.
Or something we can see, but anyway, we see that it has a long plug cord on it. He moves towards Maxwell as Maxwell replies to Eric saying, He said that and he yells as Eric lunges forward and wraps the cord for the hairdryer around Maxwell's throat, pulling it tight, straddling him. Eric thinks,
"You're a stupid man, Flood. A painfully stupid man."
And as Flood slumps forward and Eric releases the cable, he looks in front of him and sees, well, he thinks,
"Huh? That face in the mirror. What in blazes is it?"
And it's the angry face of the Spectre who emerges from the mirror in panel 3 saying,
"It is my face, putrid villain."
"What? I must be seeing things. It's not possible."
"In the land beyond the living, all things are possible,"
says the Spectre, and he gestures in Eric's direction, and we see a sharp pair of scissors floating into the air. Eric cries,
"Please, what are you going to do?"
And in panel 5, we see the scissors starting to grow to an enormous size. Eric recoils, crying,
"Oh my God, Peter, help me."
And in the final panel of page 9, oh God, nightmare fuel, the scissors have opened and they start to close around Eric's waist. Oh my goodness, Eric screams.
No.
And his scream is cut off. There's a chuck sound effect as the Spectre looks on impassively as the scissors close. Peter hears the scream, Peter with the dark hair and the moustache, hears the scream and turns round towards it thinking,
"That scream, it's Eric. Something must have gone wrong back there."
Peter goes in to have a look and we see Eric wrapped up in the curtain for the booth with his scissors either sticking out of his body or stuck in the ground or something. Anyway, it's horrendous. Peter is appalled.
"Eric, what in... Ah, good Lord, those scissors. I've got to tell Vera."
And a slow dissolve.
Soon.
Yes, we see that Vera's on stage somewhere. We can see lots of lights and there's another woman in a fancy dress. It must be some kind of fashion show or something. Peter is hiding behind a curtain and he whispers to try and catch Vera's attention.
"Psst, Vera, I've got to talk to you."
"Peter, what are you doing here? I can't talk to you now. I'll be on stage any second. I'll meet you later at my place. Now scram."
Moments later.
Yes, Peter takes his leave, walking away. We can see a sign on the wall, a poster that says, "Fashion show tonight." Gosh. Peter wanders off thinking,
"I'll just walk over to... Huh?"
And his thoughts are interrupted as a figure in a brown overcoat rushes towards him, saying, "All right, fella, stop where you are. Police." Peter pulls a gun in the first panel of page 11, saying,
"I'll stop, all right, copper. Long enough to..."
But he's interrupted by the arrival of a red sports car that appears to be being driven by Miss Sterling. She cries from the vehicle,
Jim, what's happening?"
"Gwen, stay back," says Corrigan, but she drives up. Peter grabs her by the hair, pistol in his other hand. He says to Gwen,
"He's quite right, love. Your timing is really inopportune, but as long as you're here, your car will do nicely for..." Who are you?"
And he's reacting to the fact that the policeman who was just assailing him has morphed into the Spectre. Gwen sees this happening too and she cries,
"Oh my God, Jim, is that you?"
The Spectre replies,
"No, Gwendolyn. Jim Corrigan is the man I used to be when I was alive. Now I am the Spectre."
And with that he seems to partly dissolve into the fog, but loops up and curls and drifts above Peter, looking down at him. Peter grabs at his throat, saying,
What's happening to me? Feel hot. Can't breathe. What have you done to me? I'm turning into...
And his hands seem to be dissolving. Very helpfully, Gwen remarks on the final panel of page 11.
It's not possible. He's nothing but a pile of sand.
Yes, Peter has dissolved completely into a pile of sand, his clothes lying over this pile, all that's left of him. Good grief. In the first panel of page 12, the spectre reforms into Corrigan, as Gwen says,
Oh, Jim, was that thing really you? I wanted, I hoped.
If things were different, Gwen, I would want it too, but things are not different. You've got to forget about me. Promise me, Gwen. Promise me you'll forget. And with that, Corrigan grows transparent and fades out. As he disappears, Gwen cries,
Oh, Jim! I can't forget! I can't!
A slow dissolve. A caption reads,
Meanwhile?
And we see Vera on stage at the fashion show. There's a compere chap. He's saying,
And now, Vera models an enchanting cocktail dress by Valentino.
And we hear appreciative voices in the crowd. One says, Isn't she lovely? Someone else says,
And that outfit's simply breathtaking.
It's a sort of fitted dark bodice, like sleeves, or is it gloves? Yeah, it's gloves and a long blue skirt. She looks very pretty, it must be said. Above her, not seen by Vera, but we can see him taking form in the lights. The ghostly form of the spectre starts to appear. In the next panel, Vera suddenly grasps a hold of herself. She looks panicked. She screams, Hiya! A voice off camera says,
What's happening? Why is that poor girl screaming?
I don't know. I can't see anything. But we can see the ghostly form of the spectre hovering behind Vera, and he thinks, Eternity awaits you, villainess. In the final three panels of page 12, Vera recoils, thinking, What's happening to me? And before her eyes, you see her features begin to pinch, her skin begin to tighten, her hair begin to whiten. In panel 6, she has aged dramatically. She thinks, Why do I feel so old? Her body now completely emaciated, her hair white, her skin wrinkled and old and tired. She collapses to the ground, thinking, So very, very. And in the first panel of page 13, an almost skeletal Vera lies under a spotlight, still wearing the gorgeous ball gown. We hear gasps and cries in the crowd. Someone says,
My lord!
Another voice says, Why? She looks as though she's died of old age. And the final panel is a shot of Gwen Sterling looking very sad, dragging her expensive fur coat along the pavement behind her. As she walks along the street, we can see the flashing red lights of police cars and ambulances. We can see the crowd outside the site of the fashion show. And the haunting form of the spectre, take a drink because there's a full moon behind him, hovers behind her, watching as she walks along. And the closing caption reads,
And that is how the story ends. For now.
And another tiny caption tells us that,
Next issue on sale during the last week in February.
Well then, thoughts on that then, Mr. Watson?
Gasp. That's wonderful. It's great. I mean, the giant scissors is one of the most iconic images of the Spectre run. This Spectre run.
Yes.
Was it not used as one of the main images for the Wrath of the Spectre miniseries as well? I think they had that on the cover for
yes,
one, yeah.
I'm sure it's on the cover of one of them or on the back cover of one of them, yeah.
Yeah, I do like the idea of evil hairdressers and evil fashion model. It's quite unusual.
Yes, it's interesting how multi-skilled they are and how they can multitask. You know, it's not just about photography and follicles.
Indeed.
To put it that way.
It's like they're an evil version of the A-Team that you can hire to commit crimes.
Yes, exactly.
With their interesting skills.
I mean, obviously they must have, you know, Mr. Flood and them, they must have some kind of plan for a long time. And obviously, if it's we find out that Maxwell had been stealing from Sterling and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
It rattles along in for the 13 pages or so, doesn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
It doesn't mess about.
That final page, the final image, because the last panel's pretty much a splash page, apart from the death of Vera in the top left corner. It's absolutely gorgeous. It is sensational. Jim Aparo
really
is just superb in this. The layouts, the design, the expressions, it's...
Yeah.
Phenomenal. He's having a whale of a time doing this, you can tell.
Absolutely. As I say, I think this is him at the top of his game. This is Peter Parrow. He's obviously doing the Phantom Stranger around this point at the same time. Still drawing the Batman story, as we know.
Brave and Bolds.
It's all good. I don't really too much else to say. I mean, we should talk about the scissors thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot more graphic, I mean, than what we got last week or last issue. I mean, what we got last issue was pretty horrendous, you know, with people melting and having, at least off camera, all the flesh dissolved off of bones. But this is proper horror comic stuff, isn't it? It's a lot more extreme.
In saying that, you don't really see any blood at all.
Yes.
In fact, you don't see any blood at all. But in a way, the strangulation of the bad guy by the hairdryer cord is actually a bit more gruesome because it's more realistic.
Yes.
If you know what I mean, it's less fantastical. And
again,
Aparo has captured his face amazingly.
Yeah.
He just looks shocked and distraught and panicked and in pain and knowing that he's about to die. It's all in one amazing expression. It's sensational.
It's interesting that the Spectre lets him be killed.
Yeah, well, it saves him doing it.
that's what I was going to talk about. It's, you know, it's the Spectre is obviously assessed Maxwell Flood and knows that he's a bad guy and is probably maybe at this point he's thinking, right, Eric's saving him the trouble of, I don't know, stuffing him into the office photocopier or photocopying him to death or something. It's interesting that, you know, the Spectre is obviously there while it's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, in a way, it almost gives him another excuse to deal with Eric, because Eric is obviously one of the people who blew up Mr. Sterling at the start.
Mm.
It almost gives the Spectre, you know, another reason to punish this guy. Peter's death isn't quite as effective.
No.
Happens a bit more quickly, just over a couple of panels, almost as an afterthought. But I think the bit with Vera is tremendous. I mean, that's absolute, you know, that's amazing, because when you think of the fact that it happened in front of all these people, that's going to cause... Yeah. I would think maybe repercussions is going to be like, have to be investigated. What the heck's going on there?
There's generally a sense of like poetic justice to the Spectre's dispatching of the bad guys.
Yes.
Because obviously, as a hairdresser, Eric gets chopped in half.
Yes.
As a model, Vera dies of old age.
Yes.
But Peter's is kind of, he just dissolves into sand, and that doesn't really fit in with anything, unfortunately.
Yeah, unless, you know, unless he was, I don't know, was he the one that planted the bomb or something? I don't know. Did he shoot the dogs? I don't know. I mean, we could talk a little bit about the opening couple of pages, because I've just summarised them, because it was very difficult to work out who was actually saying or what. I mean, presumably Vera was the leader, but they're all drawn very similarly. One of them, you know, it's not like any of them are recognisably, identifiably female. We don't see any of their faces. So that's the reason, obviously, listeners, why we summarised that was because we would have sat here arguing for about 3 hours about who said what and when.
Their outfits are actually very reminiscent of the Adrian Chase vigilante costume.
Or you could say the Adrian Chase vigilante costume is reminiscent of these.
He's
not going to be around for a few years. And obviously, you know, the splash panel and the cover don't really bear anything, any kind of similarity to what happens in the story.
Nope, not at all.
Defenders 39, listeners, go and check it out. Go out and get it. Let's cause a stampede. Let's cause a speculation boom. Defenders 39. I like the fact we get a couple of full moons in the story. And again, as we said, Aparo's art is gorgeous. I've managed to scavenge a few original pages from this story as well, off the interwebs that'll stick up in the socials. Again, I was sort of struck how the start of the story is very similar to the start of the last one.
Yeah.
When they've got masked figures up to no good, and then they all get revealed and they split up, and then the Spectre sort of deals with them one by one.
Yeah, the formula is well established on the second story.
Yeah, we'll have to see. We'll have to keep an eye on that and see how it plays out. You know, if there's anything else like that, we should talk about the Gwen Sterling situation. Is this going to be an ongoing arc, as it says at the end? The end for now, are we going to see Gwen return?
Oh, I think Gwen will return. It's going to be very exciting.
Yes.
I'm going to have to do that silly voice again.
Yes, listeners, you won't have to wait too long to find out if Gwen is going to return. No, all in all, it's a cracker. I think it's a good second episode of the Spectre's ongoing arc. We should mention again, at no point in the narrative is anything said about which Earth we're on or anything like that.
Nope.
They're not concerning themselves with such things at this point. Obviously, we read the letters out that dealt with the last issue and the editorial. They said that they were considering it. This, you know, this was an Earth 1 Spectre, so we'll have to see if there's anything else that follows on from that we can pick up on. And to be honest, in a lot of ways, it doesn't really need it.
Nope.
You know, this could be a completely continuity-free stories featuring the Spectre.
Indeed, yeah.
They work very well without any kind of...
baggage.
That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah.
They work very well without it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I often think that sometimes there's a lot to be said for not really worrying too much about continuity and just doing the best story you can manage it. And this is one of the best stories, I think, very much.
Excellent.
Beautiful stuff.
Well, that's what we thought. Shall we jump ahead to the correspondence for this story?
Yes, the letters pages that we're referring to here, listeners, come from, in this case, from issue 435.
Yes, Dateline Adventure. And the first letter says, Dear Joe, the second reappearance of the Spectre in Adventure Comics 432 was even better than the first. And considering the quality of the first, it was a tough act to follow. Jim Aparo is, in my opinion, one of DC's most underrated artists. His awesome drawings of the Spectre surpassed last issue's. In addition, Aparo creates some of the best landscapes in comics and shrouds them in a unique mood of eeriness, unlike any other artist around, as shown on the cover and splash page. If the Spectre is rightfully awarded his own magazine, it is a must to keep Aparo on it. Michael Fleischer's script was also as good as the preceding issues, but it is here that a problem arises. The plotline of 432 resembled 431's to the point of violating an old comics taboo, formula. It is up to you to correct this grave mistake in the future, literally what I just said.
Yes.
And that's from Arlen L. Schumer from Fairlawn, New Jersey.
Yes, you know, we did discuss that the setup was very, very similar. As I said, Master figures up to no good and then Spectre taking them out one by one. The editorial response to Arian's letter reads, Formula writing is an easy trap to fall into, and we're doing our best to eradicate that blot from our record. Take a look at 434 in this issue, Arian, and let us know how we're doing. The next letter is very brief and concerns the return of Aquaman, and the correspondent is told that Aquaman will be appearing in the next few issues of Adventure Comics, beginning with 435, so that's interesting. The next letter reads, Dear Joe, after my last fanatical fan letter in which I absolutely drooled over the return of the Spectre, I was convinced that I had said all there was to say on the subject. Well, I can't be right all the time. Aparo's art on the anguish of the Spectre was superb, as usual, and yet this was not the reason why I went into raptures over the story. The reason was Gwen. A vital part of the greatness of the original Spectre was his broken romance with Clarice. Now, through the beautiful work of Michael Fleischer, this has been restored. Now, letters from Raymond Johnson, Grand Rapids, Michigan. Editorial response to that one reads,
Gwen was the beginning of writer Fleischer's attempts to develop a supporting cast for the Spectre. What's your reaction to his latest?
Oh, do we want? I don't think we want to read that, because we haven't got that far in the narrative.
Yeah.
Interesting. Ah, you see, listeners, do you see? Ah.
And the last letter says, Gentlemen, I can't remember a time in my many years of comic reading when I have been so disappointed, even disgusted with a comic, as I am with the current Spectre series in Adventure. I find the entire concept repugnant to my moral values.
Gosh.
The fanatical zeal with which Lieutenant Jim Corrigan wreaks vengeance on those he deems evildoers seem in itself evil. Our troubled world has seen too much blind self-righteous hatred and too little love and compassion. Certainly, there are people who commit crimes, often brutal ones, but that doesn't make them any less human. The human race has yet to learn that hatred breeds hatred. It's also appeared from your magazine that the spirit world needs to learn the same thing. And that's from Brian Shuck from Bowling Green, Ohio.
Bowling Green, Ohio. Interesting. Lighten up, Brian. Come on. Says Davey. Editorial response, however, reads, We're not too sure that being human... Being Human is the name of my favourite song on Mark Owen's latest album, listeners. Go and check that out. It was my most played song on Apple Music last year. Anyway, we're not too sure that being human, whether more or less, is an answer to everything. The fact that a criminal remains human doesn't answer the question of whether he should be responsible for his actions. If, as we feel, someone who commits an act should suffer its consequences, the logic of the Spectre becomes clear. His hatred is directed at those who have no respect for human life. And if they have no respect for others' lives, they have but a fragile claim on their own. Well then, so that's that for issue 432, listeners, and we're treating you this week.
It's a double bill.
Because these Spectre stories are a little shorter, in most cases we're going to try and do a couple of them at a time where they're shorter, because, as I've said many times, I thought we'd be a lot further on than we are. But now, so anything that gets us a little bit further on is to be encouraged. So, we now turn to issue 433 of Adventure Comics, published on the 28th of February, 1974. Oh my gosh, almost 50 years exactly from when we're recording. Just out by a few days, by a week.
Gasp.
That's fascinating. So, yeah, my copy, which I've got in my hand right here, and Peter has in his hand, they were probably, if not printed, maybe even on their way to the distributors or something by that point. Who can say?
Who can say?
Pete, would you like to tell everyone about the cover to issue 433?
Yes, we have the usual Adventure Comics logo at the top. However, above it is the word weird.
Yes.
In weird writing, a bit like weird war tales and weird western.
Yes, that's very well put. Yes, weird mystery. Yeah, there was, as I think I said on the weird war tales episode, there was quite a lot of weird stuff happening at DC at this point.
Yep. So the rebranding has begun. Mm. That's the top part of the comic. The main image on the cover, there seems to be some kind of seance. There's a round table with a crystal ball in the centre. There appears to be a man with a robe and a turban with a big red jewel. It's not Sargon, by the way. It's definitely not Sargon.
Imagine it was. Anyway.
That would throw up a big question of Sargon's earth. Anyway, he appears to be leading this seance. And coming out of the crystal ball is the form of the Spectre. And the Spectre looks angry. And he seems to be holding a diminutive form of the chap in the turban, who's pointing at the Spectre and screaming.
Yes.
Everyone's aghast and appalled.
I'm aghast and appalled. Your first sort of thought looking at this is that maybe it's just a modelled figure of the man in the turban, but when you look more closely, there's an expression on his face. As you say, he does seem to be reaching towards the Spectre. It's quite creepy. Can't lie. It's creepy as heck.
It's weird, some would say.
It is a very weird image.
Yes.
Listeners, take a drink for how many times we try and say weird over the next half an hour and try and make each other laugh by doing so. So without any further ado, we leap into the story properly. A caption sets the scene, a familiar caption, very similar to the one we got last time. The caption reads,
"In the world of mortal men, he is Jim Corrigan, hard-boiled police detective. But to the leeches of the underworld, he is the Spectre, awesome avenger of evil, an earthbound ghost who punishes evil with a fearsome vengeance from beyond the grave. Join us now for the frightening story of The Swami and the Spectre.
Yes. Opening splash image, the Spectre cradling the crystal ball, which has this chap who will now identify as the Swami, within, screaming, "Please, you've got to let me out of here. You've got to." A slow dissolve on this first page.
In the spiritual sanctum of the great Swami Silal, a seance draws to a close.
Yes, there's a very moody looking image here. It appears to be some kind of lamp on the wall, which is casting a golden glow over proceedings. The Swami and a couple of what looks like older middle-aged women sat around the table, crystal ball in front of them. There appear to be flames in the air in front, surrounding the crystal ball. The Swami's looking into the crystal ball and he's saying, "Ah, the spirits grow weaker now, ever weaker. With every passing second, they're removing themselves farther and farther from our presence." And a caption gives us the credits for this issue.
Script Michael Fleischer, art Jim Aparo, art continuity Russell Carley, and editor Joe Orlando.
First panel of page 2. It's a more neutral lighting happening in the Swami's room. We can see that it's indeed a few middle-aged women that are sat around. The Swami is saying, "For tonight, our communion with them is over." One dark-haired woman sat at the table proclaims, "Oh, Swami, you are magnificent tonight. Simply magnificent." The Swami stands up in panel 2 saying, "Remember to bring your donations next time, ladies, for although the filthy money disgusts me personally, without it our great spiritual work could not possibly continue." "Don't worry, Swami," proclaims a dark-haired lady. And one silver-haired lady with expensive-looking earrings stands up and starts putting a pair of gloves on in the next panel, and she says,
"Swami, I'm sorry, but my husband refuses to let me have any more money for your great work. He refuses to believe in you, Swami. He calls you a faker and a con man. I've tried to show him how blind he is, but he won't listen."
"This is serious, Mrs. Vandergilt. Have you told your husband how his rash cynicism risks unleashing the unbridled wrath of the spirit world?"
"I've tried everything, Swami, but he's so pig-headed that..."
"Try not to worry, Mrs. Vandergilt. Tonight I shall personally intercede with the spirit world on his behalf. I shall implore the spirits to overlook his narrow-minded scepticism." Mrs. Vandergilt is taking her leave in the first panel of page 3 as the Swami continues. "I only pray that I can save him from their wrath in time."
"Oh, thank you, Swami. Good night."
A slow dissolve.
Presently.
Yes, we see the Swami in panel 2, teeing off his robe, taking off his turban. He's an immaculately turned out gentleman, very short, neat, black hair. He's a neat moustache and beard. Standing behind him is a man with close-cropped blonde hair, wearing a sort of white tunic. The Swami is saying, "I'm afraid that one of our sheep may be on the verge of leaving the fold, Smiley. It seems that Mr. Vandergilt has lost faith in our great spiritual undertaking. Where the Vandergilts go, others may follow." Smiley seems to have a cigar in the next panel as he tough-looking character, actually, when you see him here. He replies,
"You want the spirit world to teach the old Gawker a lesson, boss?"
"Why, yes, Smiley. Yes, I do. I think a bit of righteous anger from the astral realm would be most appropriate at this time." A slow dissolve.
And so, the next morning...
we're at a construction site, a building site, as we would say in the UK. We can see a large sign that obviously reads Vandergilt Construction. There are vehicles, oil drums, cranes, all sorts of stuff going on around. And we see Mr. Vandergilt, an older man, in very good shape, clearly. The pipe, white hair, glasses and moustache. He's talking to one lad in a hard hat and a green shirt. Mr. Vandergilt is saying, "Well, Ernie, how's it going? Think you'll be finished on schedule?"
"Can't see any reason why not, Mr. Vandergilt."
Camera pulls back, final panel, page 3, and we see what looks like, well, has to be Smiley, sneaking into a truck which is parked up above where Mr. Vandergilt and Ernie are standing. My health and safety klaxon is going off, something chronic. This does not look like a safe sight at all. Smiley's leaning into the cabin of this truck and he's thinking,
"All I gotta do is release the emergency brake and wham! That'll learn that Vandergilt character it ain't smart to mess with the occult."
And as we arrive at the top of page 4, the caption of the first panel reads,
"Yes, the ways of the spirit world are strange, and sometimes they are deadly."
And so over 3 panels we see Mr. Vandergilt with his pipe smoke drifting off into the early morning. We see the truck start to roll off the platform behind him. Ernie cries,
"Mr. Vandergilt, the truck, watch out!"
Vandergilt whirls around, dropping his pipe. He yells, "Huh? Ah!" and screams. And then with a massive crash, the full weight of the truck lands, smashes into, and flattens Mr. Vandergilt. Gosh, a slow dissolve.
Soon,
we see a tearful Mrs. Vandergilt at the sight, and the familiar face of Lieutenant Jim Corrigan. Corrigan is saying, "It looks like an accident, Mrs. Vandergilt, but in cases like this, well, we like to poke around a little."
Oh, Lieutenant Corrigan, I knew something like this would happen. I warned him, but he just wouldn't listen.
The final panel, page 4, we can see the ambulance taking its leave with poor Mr. Vandergilt inside. Corrigan replies, "Warn him about what, Mrs. Vandergilt?"
About offending the inhabitants of the spirit world by withdrawing his support from the spiritual researches of the great Swami Silal.
Interesting. We turn the page, passing a full page advertisement for the Minton collection, some fancy jewellery. We also pass a page, full page advertisement for some DC Comics 100 pages. We can see Superboy and the Legion, Shazam, Just League of America, and Unexpected.
I didn't expect that.
No one does. Is that the issue of JLA that introduces...
Libra.
Yes, that's the
yes.
one.
Yes.
Who wasn't seen again until like Final Crisis or Infinite Crisis. Or one of those
that was the very first 100 pager I ever bought.
Uh-huh. Interesting. There we go. I think you told me that actually when we did the 100 pages last year. Excellent. Anyway, Corrigan and Vandergilt.
Attorneys at law.
Yes, I think that's a bandit I'm looking after at King Tut's tomorrow night. Anyway, we arrive at the top of page 5. The conversation between Corrigan and Mrs. Vandergilt continues. Lieutenant Corrigan, resplendent in green, it looks like something Al from Quantum Leap would wear, is saying, "Swami Silal, is he tied up in this?" "Why, Headquarters has a file on that phony as big as the Yellow Pages, he..."
"I'll thank you to hold your tongue, Lieutenant. Swami Silal is a great spiritual leader."
"Yeah, well, thanks, Mrs. Vandergilt. You have my sincerest condolences, believe me." And he thinks, "as well as my promise to pay a little social call on the exalted Swami." A slow dissolve.
Sometime later...
Lieutenant Corrigan has obviously arrived at the Swami's home. Smiley has answered the door, wearing a turban this time as well as his white tunic. Corrigan, flashing his ID, is saying, "Okay, Punjab, or whatever you call yourself, take me to the Swami."
"Sure, Lieutenant. The Swami welcomes all lost souls, even when they're cops."
And so...
Corrigan is before the Swami. And Swami's wearing a beautiful robe, which I now realise that the flames and stuff... or a design on his robe, but I don't think they were floating in front of the crystal ball on page 1, but it still looks very effective. That's probably what he was doing, though. He was probably going for effect. Anyway, the Swami is saying, "My esteemed assistant informs me that you seek words with me, Lieutenant Corrigan. How may I be of service to you?" "A man named Vandergilt was killed this morning, Silal, flattened by a runaway dump truck." Corrigan lights a cigarette. Next panel, continuing. "The lab boy said it was an accident, which is what I thought until his widow told me that he died right after he stopped making his regular contributions to your private spiritual slush fund." The Swami looks appalled. Freeing McCorrigan's cigarette, he says, "His widow? You mean Mrs. Vandergilt? A fine, fine woman. Yes, she is a member of my flock. But what are you suggesting, Lieutenant? That I murdered Mr. Vandergilt because he withdrew his support from my work?" "No, not just yet, I'm not. But I'm warning you, Salal. You take one step out of line, you slip up just once, and I'm going to nail your hide to the wall. Remember that." Corrigan takes his leave as the Swami replies, "I will, Lieutenant. Good day." Panel 2 is an external shot of the Swami's gaff. We can see Corrigan presumably driving off. From inside the building, we hear Smiley saying,
"You want the spirit world to lean on that creep, boss?"
"No need for that yet, Smiley. Corrigan doesn't really know anything. He's just fishing. There'll be plenty of time to get rid of him. Later."
Later that afternoon.
Yes, we see the Swami sat in the palatial gardens. Gosh, he must have been making a fortune out of all this. Must have been doing it for a long time. Smiley in his turban and long tunic is presenting an attractive young lady in a yellow dress with dark auburn hair. She's very familiar to us. Smiley introduces her.
"This is Gwendolyn Sterling, Master. She comes seeking assistance in a grave spiritual matter."
"Ah, yes, my dear. How may I use my modest powers to help you?"
"This is going to sound crazy, Swami, but since you're known as a renowned master of the occult, I thought you might be able to help me."
The Swami stands, saying, "Shall we walk, Miss Sterling?"
"Swami, I've fallen in love with a man who's, well, he's a ghost. I mean, he looks human and all, but no one knows he's a ghost. But sometimes he turns into this frightening thing, into this ghostly spectre."
Amusingly, the Swami thinks to himself in the first panel of page 7, "Oh, brother, a complete fruitcake." Then he says, yes, but what exactly is the problem, Miss Sterling?"
"Well, he feels he can't lead a normal life, so long as he remains a spirit. Is there any way his humanity could be restored to him so that he'd be free to become involved with me?"
Yes, I think I can help you, but I fear that what I must do will involve great, expense. Perhaps greater than..."
"Oh, Swami, I'd pay anything."
"Good. That is very good. You see, there is a sacred rite which could, if performed properly, sever the astral link that binds your young man to the spirit world. Once freed, he will be wholly human, alive once again. But tell me, my dear, who is this young man?"
"I promise not to tell anyone, Swami, but I know I can trust you. He's a detective on the police force. His name is Jim Corrigan."
The Swami's eyes light up in reaction. He says, "Jim Corrigan?" Cuts himself off and thinks, this changes things a little. Maybe I can bilk this idiot female and do away with that pesky cop Corrigan at the same time. Gwen says,
"Oh, Swami, will you help me?"
In the next panel, top of page 8, he replies, "Of course I will. You must call Mr. Corrigan and tell him to meet you tomorrow at midnight at a certain abandoned cemetery where the spiritual emanations are particularly strong. My assistant will escort you there while I remain here to communicate with the spirits through my crystal sphere." Gwen starts to walk off in panel 2. Swami continues, "But on no account must you inform Mr. Corrigan of the real reason for the meeting. Should he become aware of your motive, a break with the spirit world would become impossible."
"Don't worry, Swami. He won't suspect a thing. I promise."
And a slow dissolve.
And so, the following night...
Yes, we see Gwen, who is still wearing pretty much what she was wearing earlier on. She hasn't got anything sensible to be coming about a cemetery in the middle of the night. Smiley is there, in his turban and his long tunic, and they appear to have lit a couple of large candles on top of a memorial. Smiley is saying,
"You keep on meditating, Miss Sterling, while I go to the main entrance to greet Mr. Corrigan. He should be here any minute now."
Gwen replies,
"All right."
In the next panel, we see Corrigan in his red car arriving at the cemetery gates. He's thinking, "There's the cemetery. Gwen certainly sounds mysterious on the phone. Wonder why she wants me to meet her here at this ungodly hour." He drives into the grounds in the next panel, continuing to think, "Wonder where that glow is coming from behind that crypt." And he can see, obviously, the glow of the candles that Gwen and Smiley had set. Corrigan continues to think in the final panel, "And where is Gwen anyway?" And then we see Smiley, not looking very smiley at all, listeners, pulling the pin from a grenade as he thinks,
"In about 2 seconds, the spirit world's going to have its revenge on you, you nosy creep."
The first panel of page 9, he hurls the grenade in front of Corrigan's car, yelling,
"Here you go, copper, catch!"
From inside the car, Jim exclaims, "What?" And then in panel 2 of page 9, there's a massive kablam! and his car is destroyed completely. Capture for panel 3.
Moments later...
Gwen has got to her feet. She says...
What on earth was that? That knife? What are you doing with?
Yes, because Smiley's walking towards her with a blade in his hand. He replies...
Shut up, you dumb broad.
In the next panel, we see the Spectre emerging from the flames that have engulfed Corrigan's car. The Spectre is thinking... Gwen summoned Jim Corrigan to this abandoned cemetery, but now she has need of the Spectre. The final panel of page 9, Smiley has grabbed Gwen by the throat. Gwen cries...
Jim, help!
Smiley's not playing, he says.
Forget about him, gorgeous. Your boyfriend's a real spook now. But don't worry, I'm gonna fix it so you can join him.
In the first panel of page 10, the Spectre, thank goodness, has arrived on the scene. He points at Smiley and says,
No, Smiley. It is you who are about to depart the mortal plane.
Huh? Who are you?
I am called the Spectre.
To which Gwen exclaims,
Oh!
Smiley starts to run off. There's a full moon behind him. Take a drink, listeners. His turban falls off. As he runs away, he cries,
You'll never get me! I'm getting out of here!
He runs along in panel 4, thinking,
I don't know what he's...
But he's cuts himself off because emerging in front of him from an open hole in the ground, from an open grave, are two spectral forms, seemingly a man and a woman. Smiley cries,
Huh? Oh no! Ghosts! I'm seeing ghosts!
A massive full moon looms over the cemetery in the final panel of page 10 as the two ghosts start to drag Smiley towards the open grave. He screams and yells,
No! No! Stay away from me, please!
In the first panel of page 11, he's in the open grave and somehow all the dirt that was piled up beside it has been piled on top of him. He screams. In the second panel of page 11, all that can be seen is his left hand poking out of the dirt. Full moon looms as the Spectre oversees this, thinking,
Even the spirits of the long dead could not tolerate this stench of his evil. Now to speak with Gwendolyn as Jim Corrigan.
Panel 3, Corrigan reforms from the Spectre, walking up to Gwen, saying, Hello, Gwen.
Oh, Jim, forgive me. I'm so sorry. I'm so ashamed. I went to the Swami because I thought that maybe, just maybe, he could help us. Help us.
I understand, Gwen.
Oh, Jim, things could be so wonderful if only you were...
Alive? I'm sorry, Gwen, but I'm not alive. As much as I care for you, a normal life cannot be mine. So long as I have my unearthly mission. Remember that, Gwen. Remember, and with a burst of green energy, Corrigan fades out. Gwen exclaims,
Oh, Jim! Jim!
She thinks.
He's gone.
We're continuing the third page following, passing
Ooh.
An advertisement for some model kits that involve Disney's Haunted Mansion, which is quite interesting.
Escape from the Crypt.
Grave Robber's Reward, Escape from the Crypt, yeah. The Vampire's Midnight Madness, his name is Morris, and he's afraid of the dark. Is it? Okay, right.
Play It Again, Sam, which is a mummy coming out of a pipe organ. Quite exciting.
Yeah, that looks cool. I wonder if you can get these on eBay. Anyway, top of page 12, caption for the first panel.
Meanwhile...
Yep, the Swami. It's only another seance evening. We can see the three elderly women sat around the table. The glow coming from his crystal ball as the Swami is saying, Concentrate, ladies. Concentrate. Let us work together to summon the spirits of the astral plane into our presence. And Swami's thinking, By now, Corrigan's done for, and I can... But then he sees something appear in the crystal ball in front of him. And he thinks, Huh? Inside my crystal ball. It's some kind of face. And from inside the crystal ball, the Spectre replies to him, saying,
It is my face, evil Swami, the wrathful face of the Spectre.
And with that, the Spectre emerges from the crystal ball. It's only the Swami who can see him. Swami cries, No! Stay away from me! I didn't do it! Please! One of the women round the table says, What's the matter with the Swami? And another one says,
I don't know. Maybe there's an evil spirit lurking in the room.
Then the next panel, one of the women exclaims in shock,
Look!
And suddenly the Swami seems to have turned into transparent crystal, I suppose. Or, as one of the other women puts it,
Oh, my dear Lord, the Swami, he's turned to glass!
In the final panel of page 12, it looks as though the Spectre is gesturing towards the Swami and tips him over. One of the elderly women says, Look! The Swami! He's falling! And then the first panel of page 13, with an almighty crash, the crystalline Swami has fallen over and shattered on the ground. One of the elderly women exclaims, Oh my God! The Spectre drifts above, unseen by the punters, obviously, still. And he's thinking,
Thus shatter the vile ambitions of all evil men. That is the way of the Spectre.
We get a nice shot. It looks as though the broken glass is actually starting to dissolve and melt, which is actually horrific. A slow dissolve, then. The caption for the final panel of page 13.
And outside the Swami Sanctuary.
Yep, see Jim Corrigan, back in his green suit and green overcoat, walking away, thinking, I shouldn't be too hard on Gwen. What she did, after all, she did out of love. And loving is part of life. And a small caption reads, End. And the rest of the page is taken up with an advertisement that tells us that the adventures of the Black Orchid are now in the Phantom Stranger, which I believe I imparted a couple of weeks ago.
Yay.
What do we think of that one, then?
Well, it certainly broke the formula.
Yes, that's fair.
Again, it's still a trope, though, you know, having the con man spiritualist. It's definitely a trope that's been around in lots of mystery comics, so it does seem very appropriate for this.
Yes.
It's a trope for a reason. It's a really fun story, and it's always good seeing these guys get their comeuppance.
Very much so. Yeah, I mean, I think the Swami and his colleague, you know, Smiley, were both quite well drawn, actually, I felt, in this one.
Uh-huh.
We got a little bit more under their skin than any of the other baddies we've had so far, I think.
Yeah.
And again, you're right, I completely agree with you. It feels like it could be any plot from an episode of The Hardy Boys or from Kolchak or even, you know...
Mission Impossible, you know.
Yeah, like... any kind of, you know, those old formulaic American shows that we all love so much. I found this one a little bit more satisfying, actually, in a way, because the way that Mr. Vandergilt was killed off and stuff, you know,
yeah,
and then the way the Swami was planning to get rid of Gwen as well,
uh-huh,
you know, because all he's really worried about, I suppose, is once he's got the money, then that's it, isn't it? So presumably Gwen has paid him up front and, you know, and they're thinking, right, you know, let's just get rid of her. And it was nice to see Corrigan doing a little bit more almost Columbo-type confronting the bad guys and letting them stew sort of thing. I liked that.
I've got many questions about Corrigan as a detective here, because everything he seems to investigate, people seem to die in very, very, very mysterious circumstances. All his suspects. I mean, his boss must be tearing his hair out at these bizarre reports he must be handing in constantly.
Yes, the absolute lack of convictions that's taking place. Yeah, well, Peter, it's going to be very interesting to see if anyone else picks up on this.
Yes, that's very true. Very true.
The cover, of course, lied completely.
Yes.
I thought we were going to get some kind of voodoo type vengeance based, you know, with the Spectre, based on the fact that he was grasping an image of the Swami in his hand.
He did come out the crystal ball, but it was only the Swami that could see him. So that's something.
So that was kind of, but obviously in the cover they're all reacting to it. So that was a bit.
Yeah.
But that was actually, that was one thing that I liked, because it shows that the Spectre's been quite careful.
Yes.
By not revealing himself to the customers, shall we say. They're just going to see something bizarre happening to the Swami, and they're just going to be more convinced that there's kind of spooky, scary stuff happening, and, you know, maybe the Swami did something wrong. All that was quite interesting, I think.
Yeah. I'm wondering if the Swami started off as this spiritual con man, or whether he actually worked his way up through other con jobs and found this as a niche. Because obviously he has got a lot of money to get this massive mansion that he has, unless he's conned that out of someone. Or is squatting, for lack of a better expression.
Yeah, I mean, is the gardens look absolutely lush, don't they? We'll have to make sure we represent them on the socials.
Yeah, I'd love to know more of his backstory. And as I said, when I saw the cover, I did do a double take thinking, is this Sargon? Because it is the red ruby in the turban. It's like, oh, is it? Well, no, it's not. Okay.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, obviously we have to be very careful how we sort of played the character. His, shall we say, his ethnicity is not apparent, but it doesn't seem like it's someone that's wearing makeup or anything. He's obviously, you know, a very suave and very handsome and very altogether man. So the whole thing is obviously very calculated.
So he should be called Suave as opposed to Swami, then.
Yeah, that would do. I've got to say, I found the resolution of how the rest of the story is so well paced. It fills out the full thing quite nicely.
Yeah.
I liked a bit when Smiley sort of tried to escape and he was pulled into the grave. I found that a lot more effective than the way that the Spectre, just literally in a manner of over two panels. In fact, we don't even see the Swami sort of change. The Spectre looms out the crystal ball, and then the next panel he's changed. I would have liked to have seen another panel showing the transformation.
Yeah.
Maybe if they'd lost a couple of panels of the nice palatial gardens or the stuff in the cemetery. The ending just felt a little bit abrupt for me. A little unsatisfying.
But you do have the poetic justice of the Swami turning into the glass of the crystal ball that he's been conning everyone with. So you do have that.
Yeah, but to me, that wasn't really as clear as what it could have been.
Yeah.
Spectre's line about shattering vile ambitions, that was quite funny. But to me, it just felt a little rushed. And given what happened to some of the other baddies we've had so far this season, I would have liked to have seen a little bit more time spent on it, just so that we, and I suppose the Spectre, could have relished it.
Yes.
A little bit more.
Yes.
I think it felt a bit rushed there. That's probably my only criticism. But again, Jim Aparo, some brilliant layouts and stuff. I don't think the artwork is quite as gorgeous as it's been, but it's the colouring job is still marvellous. We
absolutely
don't have full credits at this point. We don't know who's doing what, but all the stuff at Vandergilt's building site looks great. The stuff in the gardens, all the stuff in the cemetery night, it all looks brilliant. Very, very satisfying. And they've got the, you know, Smiley getting pulled into the grave is horrible.
It certainly is.
I think that's much more effective than the Swami's death.
Yeah, and also there's an element of poetic justice in that as well, because obviously Mr. Vanderbilt, he got crushed, and, you know, Smiley gets dragged into the grave where he's sort of buried alive, almost crushed as well.
Yes, Vandergilt buried under the dump truck, or, you know, yeah, that just about works, yeah.
And interesting to see the establishing cast now building up with Gwen coming back.
Yes, of course.
She's got the hots for Jim Corrigan.
I want to kind of quickly examine what she says about Jim to the Swami. I fall in love with a man who's a ghost. I mean, he looks human, but he turns out frightfully. This, so he can't lead a normal life so long as he remains a spirit. So how does that really tie in? Does that tie in completely closely to what gets said in the previous one? Just going to flick back through 432, conversation at the end. Is that really? Things were different. I'm going to forget. You promised me you'll forget. It seems that she's maybe done a bit more digging.
She might have done.
Or maybe there's been another encounter.
Could be.
That we haven't seen at this point. I don't know. She seems very well informed about Corrigan's situation. Yeah. That's all I'll say. I think that's the point I was making. Something must have happened, I think, that we haven't seen. I don't know.
And Jim Corrigan, our hero, is a smoker.
Yes.
Have we seen him smoke before? I don't think we have.
I think we have. I'm sure we have.
I don't think so. Not in the 60s series.
I've got many race memories of him standing with a cigarette in his hand, so I don't know. Maybe it's from other stories that they've read in preparation. I can't remember. So, listeners, from now on, we're going to have to take a drink every time we see Jim Corrigan smoking.
Yes. Smoking and drinking. Yes.
Watch out for that one. Yes. So, I don't really... Do you have anything else?
No, that's about it for me as well. Yeah,
cool.
It's a nice story and good comeuppance, but it is a well-worn trope, but an enjoyable one. Yeah. So yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So listeners, we're now going to move on to the contemporary correspondence, reading from the letters from issue 436. So the first letter reads, Dear Joe, I don't think you guys have been quite fair with us. You say you think you found a permanent star finally in the Spectre. I agree. But then why do we have to go through perhaps 2 years of the Seven Soldiers of Victory, Aquaman and Deadman before you select a star? And that's from Mike Verderosa, Stony Brook, New York.
And editorial response is, you misunderstood our comments. The other series are all intended for the back of adventure. We were hoping that the Spectre would become permanent when we wrote that page, and the latest sales figures that we've seen indicate that our hopes are more than satisfied. Barring any change in the magazine sales, the Spectre will remain the star of adventure until he gets his own magazine. That's our latest hope. And the second letter says, Dear Joe, and I thought the last issue was great. Adventure 433 is the best of the new series of the Spectre stories. First that Jim Aparo cover. It gave me a chill right up my spine. Then came Mike Fleischer's tight, fast-moving and imaginative story. His handling of the strip is great. Gwen is just right for the storyline, but don't put her in every issue. Let Jim and the Spectre stay free from the old routine of rescuing the girl every issue. He then goes on to talk about Captain Fear, and that's from Robert Greenberger from Jericho, New York. Robert Greenberger, of course, went on to work for DC and as a writer and plotter and DC staffer. So, yeah, it's good to hear from him here.
Absolutely. The editorial response is really just to what Robert was saying about Captain Fear and the rotation of the backup strips, but they do mention that following Aquaman, that there will be a Seven Soldiers of Victory story serialised over 5 issues. So, listeners, if you've ever voiced a member of the Seven Soldiers of Victory for us, stand by your beds. The next letter reads, Dear Joe, the Spectre series in Adventure Comics is quite possibly the most enjoyable superhero innovation since The Spectre. The Spectre has never ceased to amaze, probably because he has never ceased to be inconsistent. That's a good point. In any of his many resurrections. Okay, from cover to cover, beautiful front cover, spooky, and had the greatest colouring I've ever seen. I did not, however, approve of the unofficial retitling of the mag to Weird Adventure Comics. This magazine, has stood strong and tall with Adventure Comics emblazoned under cover for 40 years, and there is no reason to change. The Swami and the Spectre was extremely well done and possibly the most intriguing story this month. Jim Aparo is so great, it drives me crazy! Which is weird because I thought the artwork is a lot weaker this month. Anyway, times I have to stop out of sheer shock and stare at a panel for 5 minutes. His Spectre is as good as, if not better, than his Batman. He certainly can stick with a mood, which is all important to the Spectre. Mike Fleischer introduced some continuity in this issue with the return of Gwen Sterling, who hopefully will pop up in every issue. Yes, listeners, the readers are divided on whether or not Gwen should turn up as often as she does. Mike is certainly competent enough to handle her. The only good thing about the concluding installment in the Captain Fear saga was that it was the concluding installment. Yes. I'm anxious to see the Seven Swords of Victory. It's sure to be a classic and a comics with an X first. It isn't often that it takes 29 years to find artists for a story. Hopefully, they will be successful enough to warrant their own magazine. Gosh, did the Seven Soldiers get their own book, listeners? You have to stay tuned. Keep up the good work. That's from Bob Rohde, Oak Brilk, I'm guessing Illinois.
And the editorial response says, the use of weird on the logo is one calculated to attract mystery readers to the Spectre, a mystery superhero. It is not necessarily a permanent change, and we don't think it's anything to get too upset about.
Who are these mystery readers? That's what I want. People that walk about in cloaks, being mysterious.
With hats. Big fedoras.
Yes. Big hats. Huge hats. Biggest hats you've ever seen. Right, the next letter reads,
Dear Joe, I noticed you mentioned the new upcoming serialised Seven Soldier story. I hope it's to replace the Captain Fear strip and not the Spectre. You'd really be hard put to beat what Mike and Jim are turning out for you in that department. And who are those half-dozen favourite artists you mentioned? Could you ask for some names? Will you answer me if I do? Anyway, just out of curiosity, does Jim Aparo do his own lettering? It seems different from most standard lettering, and that's from Steve Clement from Pawtucket, Rhode Island.
Interesting. Editorial response reads, favourite artist you want, favourite artist you'll get. The chapter's already in work, and this is obviously for the Seven Soldier story. Artwork that is, are by Dick Dillon, Lee Elias, returning to Green Arrow after 10 years, yes. And Howie Chaykin on The Shining Knight. Wow. And yes, Jim Aparo does letter all his own art. That's very interesting.
Sensational.
Yeah. We get a little blurb here which reads, next issue of The Spectre and another classic in Aquaman facing a quiet day in Atlantis, but don't just sit around waiting for it. Write us. Our address is Dateline Adventure, blah, 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 blah. So, that's us. 3 issues in to the revived 70s adventure comic Spectre. Despite, you know, some good characterisation for the Swami and all that, I felt it was kind of the weakest so far.
Mm. Yeah.
Nice to do these two together, actually, and I think that works well, given us being able to compare them, you know, like so. I think that's going to work quite well. Interesting.
Absolutely.
Yes. Listeners, of course, the Spectre will return very, very soon.
He certainly shall. Now, that's what we think of these stories, and you've heard what the readers at the time thought of these stories. What do you think of these stories? Get in touch and let us know. You can email us at theearth2podcast@gmail.com. Make sure you follow us on social media, because we're putting up lots of lovely bonus material for this and indeed every episode.
We certainly will.
On Facebook and Instagram, we're at theearth2podcast, and on Twitter, we're at podcast_earth2. And it's the number 2 for all of our social media.
It certainly is. Peter, welcome back. I've missed you.
My voice just about held out. Yay!
Yes. Awesome. Good job. Right, listeners, hopefully Peter's voice will hold out long enough that he'll be back next week. You'll have to stay tuned and find out what... Actually, all going well, it'll be another aspect of the DC Golden Age legacy next week. Listeners, could be very, very interesting. Mm-hmm. So make sure you join us for that one. On that bombshell.
I've been Peter.
I've been David. Take care. See you soon on...
The Earth 2 Podcast.
Transmatter Cube activated. Return coordinates set for Earth Prime.
And it ticks, ticks, ticks as the finger. Finger, that's not right. Sorry.
The God. Finger of time.
Finger of time coming soon from Big Finish Productions. The crystalline Swami has fallen over and shattered on the ground. One of the elderly women exclaims,
oh my God.
Way to kill the tension.